At a time when men were gathering to David, we're told in 1 Chronicles chapter 12 and verse 32 that the sons, you won't need to turn there, but that the sons of Issachar came to David, and then it says this about those men. It says they were men who understood the times. Now, that was stated at a time very similar to the times, I believe, that we're living in today, when the kingdom was in disarray, when the majority was siding with evil and turning against good, when a remnant was yet on the run, so to speak, when certain things had to be done underground, when in order to get correct information and accurate news, the mainstream media outlets had to be bypassed, and when the existing government regarded the godly as renegades, probably labeling them as kooks or seditionists or extremists, and as groups they were probably called something like cults. Times very similar to the ones that we're living in today. And thank God that David at that time had men who could discern the signs of the times. Yes, we're in times very similar like those at the time of David. However, do we have men today who are able to do the same as those men called Issacharites at David's time? Men who can observe what's going on around them and evaluate them and discern them correctly. Men who understood and could see through and could apply correctly the signs of the times. You know, we live in a day and age, again, very much like those of that day, but we live in a day when there's few indeed who are like those men described there in 1 Chronicles chapter 12. You tell me, how many Issacharites do you know today? How many people do you know who can see beyond their noses? Or who can think without being told what to think? Who can, on their own, determine what's right and wrong? Who can come up with an original idea? Who are willing to challenge what they read in the papers or hear on the radio or TV? Who can interpret the signs of the times? Well, let me answer that for you. Not very many. Psalms 82:5 describes the majority of our people very well, where it says, they do not know, nor do they understand. They walk about in darkness. And let me tell you why it's that way. You know, we might be able to blame some of it on the Babylonian rat race that we're living in today, or the boob, what we could call boob tube mesmerization, or fluoridization and its effects upon our minds. Or on harlotry and new wine, as it's described in Hosea 4 and verse 11. But here's the primary reason why it's that way today, and that's because the preachers today are not doing their job. You see, it was the preacher's job to teach the people to be discerning. It wasn't just left up to the people to figure out everything on their own. It just wasn't that way, because God somehow knew that that wasn't just going to happen. It was the preacher's job to teach the people how to be discerning. Turn to Ezekiel 44 for proof of that. Ezekiel chapter 44, and look at verse 15 to begin with. There it says, but the Levitical priesthood, the sons of Zadok, who kept charge of my sanctuary when the sons of Israel went astray from me, shall come near to me to minister to me, and they shall stand before me to offer me the fat and the blood, declares the Lord Yahweh. So it's talking here about the Levitical priesthood. And then from there on out, it just describes the different duties of those Levitical priesthood. We won't want to read those, but jump down to verse 23 and then listen to what it says. It says, moreover, they, the Levitical priesthood of that time, moreover, they shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. That's the job. That was the job of the priest of that day, and it's certainly the job of their counterparts today, the preachers today, to teach and help the people learn how to discern. But for the most part, preachers today are not doing their job, and consequently the people have no ability to discern the times or the signs of the times. No, instead we know exactly what the priests are today. In Isaiah 56, 10 and 11, they're described very aptly. It says, his watchmen are blind, all of them know nothing. All of them are dumb dogs, unable to bark, dreamers lying down who love to slumber. And the dogs are greedy, they are satisfied, and they are shepherds who have no understanding. They have all turned to their own way, each one to his unjust gain, to the last one. What a description, and you've heard me use that before and other preachers. Use that as a description for the people, the preachers of the day. What a perfect description. But did you catch why the preachers, or the priests of that time and the preachers of the day, are unable to speak out? Verse 11 in the first part says, they are shepherds who have no understanding. The shepherds themselves didn't have any understanding. Why? Well, the last verse of that verse tells us why. It says they have all turned, because they have all turned to their own way. Now, if they have all turned to their own way, what's implied? If they've all turned to their own way, what's implied? Obviously, they've consequently turned away from God's way. And what's the result? Turn to Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5, and look with me at verses 12 through 14. Beginning with 12. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. And then verse 14, it says, but solid food, the word of God, is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. They turned away from God's word. And consequently, neither they nor those they lead can discern between good and evil, between the profane and the holy and the profane, and the clean and the unclean. And without that ability, it is absolutely impossible for them to discern the signs of the times. And Yahshua here on earth himself denounced those who couldn't do that. Turn to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16, verses 1 through 3. Verse 1, and the Pharisees and Sadducees came up, and testing him, asked him to show them a sign from heaven. But he answered and said to them, when it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. Verse 3, and in the morning there will be a storm today, for the sky is red and threatening. And then listen to what he said. He said, do you know how to discern the appearance of the sky and cannot discern the signs of the times? It was a rebuke by Christ that they couldn't. They could discern the weather. They could forecast the coming tornado. They could forecast the coming storm, but they couldn't discern the signs of the times. Why? Well, it's already been showed us in Isaiah 56. Because they had turned away from God's way and they turned to their own ways. You know, I pray often as Paul did in Philippians. Matter of fact, it's nearly a prayer of mine every morning. Prayer very similar to the one found by Paul in Philippians 1, verses 9 and 10, where it says, and this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. That's a prayer. You know, when we're talking about discernment, what are we talking about? We're talking about eyes with the ability to see, ears with the ability to hear. That's my prayer. I don't know how many times I've prayed that, at least in the last 5 to 6 years. And again, it's nearly a prayer that I pray every morning for our people. God, help our people's eyes to open. Help their ears, to bring their ears so that they can hear. Open their eyes. I didn't think about it then, but I'm preparing this message. I realized what I'm praying for them is for discernment, for them to be able to discern the signs of the times, to open up and to be able to see. I make that is a prayer. I recognize it needs to be my prayer. But I also recognize that sometimes praying isn't enough. It's also my duty as a contemporary counterpart of the Old Testament priest to do more. I need to teach discernment. I need to help you, help others, to be able to discern the times. So let's discuss. In this message and the one coming, I want to discuss with you what I believe are some of the current pertinent signs of the times. Now, has anyone noticed that in recent times there has been some very significant events? Matter of fact, I believe there's been an escalation of significant events in just a short amount of time, in the last 2 or 3 years. The escalation, an escalation of significant events that I believe, really, in my mind at least, this escalation of events, I believe that begins when President Bush began to openly use the term the New World Order. Now, that term alone should have clued us in to the fact that things were beginning to escalate, that they were on the increase and on the rise. That alone should have done it, let alone other things that are going on around us. You know, patriots for the last 40 years or more have been speaking and warning people about the globalists, about the trilateralists, about the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, and their New World Order plans. And of course, the majority of people who have heard patriots talk of such things basically have probably responded, for the most part, that considered those people as being a bubble just a little off center. I can remember my own mother when I shared with her about the trilateralist. That was basically her response, I'm sure. At least from the way she verbally responded, I walked away thinking that she was thinking I was just a little bit off center. You know, seldom were we taken seriously. But all of a sudden, President Bush is openly discussing what in the past was only talked about behind closed doors. We knew it was being talked about behind closed doors. We had seen the reports. We had seen congressional paperwork that proved that it was being discussed, and plans had been in the makings. I just received a congressional report, Foreign Relations Committee report, back in the 1950s, and you wouldn't believe what they discussed behind the closed doors of Congress back then. And I'll probably sometime in the near future be bringing a message or two just from that congressional report to show that back in the 1950s they had exactly this whole thing planned out, detailed, to what that is taking place before us today. Signs of the times back then, if anybody could have been in those meetings or received those reports. But how many people really woke up and saw it? Now, how many people, like the Issacharites, could read that sign of the times that we had just a few years back when President Bush started using openly the term the New World Order? Now, someone may counter, well, if the New World Order is what the internationals have in mind, then why hasn't President Clinton carried out their plan since he's taken office? Well, let me counter that question with my own question. How many of you out there can see beyond the end of your nose? You know, don't forget that Clinton's nickname isn't Slick Willie for nothing. You know, you really think that Slick Willery is not a globalist today? Think about it. The phrase, the New World Order, was George Bush's expression. At least one that he borrowed and at least brought out in the open. But it was his expression. It would be recognized by the populace as being George Bush's expression. And with any hope of victory in his presidential bid, Clinton wasn't about to borrow Bush's verbiage. No, he came up with his own to describe the very same thing. But how many today have eyes and ears enough to be able to have been able to have heard what it was? You recall Bill Clinton's acceptance speech back at the Democratic Convention. He didn't speak of New World Order, did he? Oh, yes, he did. He just called it the New Covenant. Same thing. And for anybody here or anybody out there in cassette tape land that happens to think that when he used the term the New Covenant, he was talking about the New Testament, you might want to check yourself into the nearest hospital and have yourself checked out for dumb and deafness. Because I'll guarantee you he had no intention at all or no reference at all to the Bible in any sense of the matter. except to confuse a few Goyim Christians out there who couldn't understand it or see through it. Now, what do you think Clinton, or why do you think Clinton is leaving soldiers over in Somalia under UN jurisdiction for? Well, people, it sets a precedent. You know, there's never been a time in here. This is the first time in American history when American soldiers have been left under the jurisdiction of a foreign entity. It sets a precedent for a new world order global army. It's just another step toward Judaism's one world order globalist aim. And that's right, I said Judaism's aim. And for anyone who doesn't understand that, they can write an order. I take the New World Agenda, or the New World Order, whose agenda is it? And I'll send it to you free of charge if you haven't been able to yet recognize whose world order aims we're dealing with when we're talking about the New World Order. Right in line with that, have you heard that 55% of Clinton's administration is Jewish? And guess what has been reported as two of Hillary's favorite books? The Autobiography of Golda Meir, and Chaim, I'm not sure if I'm going to get this name right, but Chaim Podok's 1967 bestseller, The Chosen. Now, could those possibly be just little signs of the times that we're in? Let's go to the L.A. riots. Is there anything from the L.A. riots other than what the major media networks would like you to understand from them? Is there anything that is significant as a sign of the times that we can see in the L.A. riots? How about that they were planned? Now, people are going to find that extremely hard to believe, at least some people will. Matter of fact, it's even almost too hard for me to believe that those could have been planned. But Colonel Jack Moore, several months prior to the actual event through his intelligence sources, received information and sent it out that the blacks were planning to riot across the United States on the very day it happened. And I received the report at least two or more months before that event ever took place. Didn't say anything about L.A. riots. Just said that there would be riots. Didn't say anything about the Rodney King beating. But it said that there would be riots, that the blacks were at least planning the riots far before the event ever happened. Now, personally, I'm convinced that there were actually others behind the blacks who were doing the planning. As a matter of fact, could it possibly be just a part of the overall plan described by Israel Cohen in his book, A Racial Program for the 20th Century, which was quoted by Congressman Abernathy on June 7th, 1957, into the Congressional Record. Let me read it to you, and I'm reading to you right from a copy of the Congressional Record on page 8,559 of the Congressional Record of June 7th, 1957. Here is what Congressman Abernathy quoted. He said, Israel Cohen, a leading communist in England, in his racial program for the 20th century, wrote in 1912 the following. We must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tension. By propounding the consciousness of the dark races that for centuries they have been oppressed by the whites, we can mold them to the program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. While inflaming the Negro minority against the whites, we will endeavor to instill in the whites a guilt complex for their exploitation of the Negroes. We will aid the Negroes to rise in prominence in every walk of life, in the professions, and in the world of sports and entertainment. With this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and begin a process which will deliver America to our cause. Maybe, just possibly, it was the plan of somebody else that these riots take place, that the blacks were just simply being used to accomplish a greater purpose toward globalist plans. You know, beware. Read the signs of the times, people. Beware of what may be planned. Following the Reginald Denny trial yet to come in L.A. Somebody can say, more riots? You know, why would the more riots or the past riots, why? Why would the government be interested in creating riots across this land? Well, because if they escalate into what can be described a national crisis, then martial law can be declared. And there are many who believe that martial law is simply a springboard into the New World Order. or at the very least, widespread rioting across this nation would be a means of convincing our people that we do indeed need a national police force of 100,000 new law enforcement people on the streets, which Bill Clinton is right now proposing and pushing for. It would certainly do that. And even that would be simply a step toward world government. Listen to Protocol Number 7, Article 1 through Article 2, Sentence 3. For those, again, who may get this tape and may not have ever heard of the protocols, they're called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. They are simply the minutes from the first Zionist Congress meeting held in Basel, Switzerland in 1897. And they were basically the blueprint for world conquest by the Jews. Here's what it says in Protocol 7, starting with Article 1. It says, the intensification of armaments, the increase of police forces are all essential for the completion of the aforementioned plans, those of world government. What we have to get at is that there should be in all the states of the world, besides ourselves, only the masses of the proletariat, or the working class, a few millionaires devoted to our interests, police and soldiers. And it goes on, it says, throughout all Europe and by means of relations with Europe and other continents also, we must create ferments, discords, and hostility. Therein we gain a double advantage. In the first place, we keep in check all countries, for they well know that we have the power whenever we like to create disorders and to restore order. End quote. Now you hear that, and you realize that that was written and planned as far back as 1897. All of a sudden, maybe, the fact that those L.A. riots were actually planned months in advance doesn't seem that far-stretched, or so far out of the realm of possibility. Anybody out there have eyes to see and ears to hear? Of course, they wouldn't call it this. But doesn't Bill Clinton's police force sound a whole lot like the KGB and the Gestapo police? Signs of the times, if you can only read them. How about the L.A. trials? Is there anything to learn from the L.A. trials that were just completed? And, of course, the masses of the people all respond, there's really justice in our land. We can't really trust our court systems. You know, get your head out of the sand, people. Let me tell you what we should have learned from the L.A. trials. And that is that when government doesn't get the verdict they want from a jury, they will forget all judicial policy, and those already determined guilty by the government will be put in double jeopardy until the verdict they want is arrived at. That's what we need to be learning. We need to not be learning what the media wants us to learn out there. Oh, justice reigns in the land. You know, sometimes you think about what our people fall for, and it wants to make you you want to cry. Cry or laugh. I'm not sure which to do sometimes. Now, I'm not defending the actions of those police officers, but in this case, it looks a whole lot like police state action. A sign of the times. But how many of our people read it as that? How many people could see exactly what was going on? Well, I guarantee again, it was very few. Now, if you really want evidence of police state, one only needs to go back as far back as last August to Ruby Creek, Idaho, where over 400 federal troops equipped with helicopters, armored personnel carriers, high-powered telescope sniping rifles, unjustly, unlawfully surrounded and attacked another army? Foreign troops on our soil? An out-of-control riot? A pack of rabid wolves? Or ferocious grizzly bears? No. An American family. One family of six. That was more been decimated. Now think about that. Signs of the times. Anybody awake out there? And of course, we don't have to go as far back as August or go to Idaho to find police state action, do we? No, we just need to go back to last Monday when men, women, and children in Waco, Texas were again assaulted and this time gassed and burned alive. And by the way, at the very same time that many of our congressmen were preparing to memorialize the so-called gassing and burning of the supposed 6 million at the new Holocaust Museum in D.C. at the same time. Oh, I know, I'm taking a chance as being labeled a Waco wacko by a lot of brainwashed populace today who would ask, what purpose would our government have in burning them up? Well, how about this for a purpose? How about for the purpose of covering up incriminating evidence? The same reason they had planned to burn down the Weaver homestead in Idaho, but just so happened got caught in the act and couldn't follow through with their morbid plans and actions. Somebody says, well, what evidence would they want to cover up? I mean, they want the evidence, don't they? They want to get those people. I'm not talking about that kind of evidence. What kind of evidence? Well, how about the bullet holes through the roofs that was from the helicopter raid the night before the quote-unquote initial raid that was televised on TV? That's right. Even David Koresh's lawyer, Thursday on Primetime Live, while being interviewed by Diane Sawyer, had said that he had seen those bullet holes in the ceiling and that they were the ones that was that raid that caused David Koresh's wounds, not the one the next day. Could that be evidence, the type of evidence that maybe they wanted to cover up so they planned to burn the place down? And I'll tell you, there's all kinds of evidence coming out now that they indeed did burn that place down. And don't try to convince me that we don't already have a police state when two legitimate reporters aren't allowed in the press conferences because they weren't a part of the press corps who has a controlled, symbiotic relationship with the feds and who, of course, won't ask embarrassing questions like Louis Beam did and who will only report the one-sided, favorable propaganda that the feds feed to them. You know, wake up, people. The chains around our hands and our feet and our necks are rattling. Louis Beam, a reporter for the Jubilee newspaper, was thrown in jail. Why? For simply asking the wrong questions. Can you hear the rattling? I can hear the rattling, more so than any time in the past. One of the press conferences, he dared to ask the feds if their action meant that we were now a police state. And, by the way, they refused to answer the question. Hey, you know, I just get to thinking here, I'm a column writer for the Jubilee newspaper. Maybe I'm next for not teaching, for preaching a non-politically correct message. You know, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, that should tell you something about the times we're living in. How about we no longer have freedom of speech or freedom of the press? Listen to Protocol 12, Article 4 in this regard. It says, not a single announcement will reach the public without our control. Even now, this is already being attained by us inasmuch as all news items are received by a few agencies in whose offices they are focused from all parts of the world. These agencies will be already entirely ours and will give publicity only to what we dictate to them. People, that was written in 1897. What do you think it's like today? There's only one left today in America that all the news filters through it. And anything else that's gotten out is only gotten out through the underground as we bypass the mainline media sources. That protocol, if it described the times back then, it even more so describes the times today. Here's something we also need to be able to learn to discern. How about the buzzwords that go around that have been created to manipulate and control the minds of the populace? Listen to Protocol 3, Article 10, Sentence 1, and what it says in this regard. It says, quote, "The Goyim have lost the habit of thinking unless prompted by the suggestions of our specialist," end quote. Also, Protocol 7, Article 5, it says, "We must compel the governments of the Goyim to take action in the direction favored by our widely conceived plan, already approaching the desired consummation by what we shall represent as public opinion, secretly prompted by us through the means of that so-called great power, the press, which with a few exceptions that may be disregarded, is already directly in our hands," end quote. Have you been discerning enough to catch the evolution of buzzwords? They begin with choosing words that immediately represent something negative in the minds of the people. Words like hatemonger and bigot and racist. And of course, they apply those words to anyone whom they want to discredit. Of course, whether they legitimately represent those people or not. You know, that matters not. Their only concern is to put them in the light they want them to be in the minds of the people. But have you ever noticed the evolution of these buzzwords? They pick the nasty words first, like the ones I just shared with you. And then by association, all of a sudden they can make other terms have a negative connotation as well. For example, it's not that far back when all of a sudden survivalist was a negative connotation. People didn't think what it really meant and what it really inferred to, but as soon as you heard the word survivalist, because all of a sudden it was associated with these other rash negative words like racist and bigot and so forth, all of a sudden being a survivalist, you're a survivalist? Oh my God. Yeah, I want to survive. Don't you? Yeah, then one of the newer ones is the word separatist. This kind of got started back at the Randy Weaver situation. Now all of a sudden, a separatist? You're one of those evil separatists? My God, I can't have anything to do with you. Yeah, I want to separate myself, you know. And yet it's got this connotation that they're these very cruel, harmful people. And all they want to do is just separate themselves. You see that evolution of terms and why they do that? And all of a sudden they start getting you to think negative about anything and everything without your ability to be able to think what's really being said with those words. Have you caught the latest two buzzwords that are being used now? How about compound and stronghold? Aren't those the words that are being used now? Began in Ruby Creek, Idaho, with the Weaver incident. And did you catch that? I didn't say it began at the Ruby Creek Weaver compound. I said it started at the Weaver at the Ruby Creek Weaver homestead, because that's really what it was. And I'm sure as people start to figure that out more and more, that all of a sudden the new buzzword is going to be homestead. They're going to put this negative connotation on homestead. You're a homesteader? Oh my God. Well, compound and stronghold were also terms that the media indiscriminately threw around about the Waco situation as well, didn't they? But let me ask you, so what? So what if they had a compound or a stronghold? Is there some law in the books that says they can't? And yet everybody today, just being manipulated and brainwashed by the media, all of a sudden thinks, matter of fact, I think it was Diane Sawyer, well, it was Diane Sawyer, in talking with this attorney, and this man even broke down and cried about the situation. And I hope you prayed for that man. I know I got down and I prayed for that man, that the God would continue to open that man's heart and mind. But Diane Sawyer responded like, "Now you're trying to paint these people as if they're good, and they've got a compound. You can't tell me they're good people when they've got compound and they've collected weapons. See, in the minds of the people, all of a sudden, compound. Oh, yes, these evil people. And there isn't a law in the books that says they can't have a compound or they can't have the weapons that they had stored in the compound. Matter of fact, there certainly may be some cases where it's a pretty good idea to have a compound. Two of the Bible's greatest heroes used them. Turn to Judges chapter 6. Judges chapter 6, and listen to verse 2. It said, "And the power of Midian prevailed against Israel, because of Midian the sons of Israel made for themselves the dens which were in the mountains, and the caves, and the strongholds." They had strongholds, and of course, just very shortly thereafter, this story of these people leads right into the story of Gideon, who had the same kind of thing. Remember, he was that tax protester back then who was trying to keep his wheat, his property, his means of living from the government, the corrupt government that was then in existence. He was beating out his wheat in the wine press. And I'll bet you money that Gideon was one of those who had a stronghold. Had a stronghold of wheat that he kept protected, didn't he? And those are the very people who are held in high esteem in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11, which of course we know is the faith chapter. Listen to just a couple verses. Starting with verse 32 and 33, it says, "But what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon." He'd gone in detail over all these other great heroes of faith of the past, and he says, I can't go into detail with all of them. So he says, "What more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and Samuel and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises." And then jump down to verse 38, where it says, and listen of the description of the very verse we just read in Judges chapter 6. It says, "Men of whom this world is not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground." The very same people, lauded and praised and lifted up in high esteem. And there were people who had strongholds and come in what could have been called compounds. David also had a stronghold, and I might add, at a time when he was at odds with the corrupt, controlling, ruling government of his day. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 23. First Samuel chapter 23 and verse 14. It says, "And David stayed in the wilderness in the strongholds, and remain in the hill country in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand." That's stated about David three or four or five different times. Matter of fact, back in 1 Corinthians 12, when we first read about, or I shared with you about the Issacharites, and the fact that they were the men who could read the signs of the times. It's also stated that some of the other men who came to them, I believe it was the Gadites, who came to him at his stronghold. That's where they came to him at. But note verse 19 of this chapter. Verse 19, it says, "Then Ziphites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, Is David not hiding with us in the strongholds at Horesh, on the hill of Hakalah, which is on the south of Jeshimon?" Now, we don't know very much about the Ziphites. Matter of fact, about all that we know is that twice they tried to turn David over to King Saul. Now, let me ask, do you think we got any Ziphites amongst us today? Well, actual descendants, I don't know. But the cult awareness network may be the modern counterpart of the Ziphites in David's day, because we now have information which proves that they were the ones behind the siege in Waco, Texas, and who knows how many others. Matter of fact, the man I spoke on the phone with yesterday said that he knows he's got information from sources from within that the next one's going to be in Montana. I even think I maybe even know where that's going to be. But anyway, who knows how many others that it's going to, where it's going to be, and what's and who from, excuse me, how many, who knows how many others they've been behind, but we do know that they've at least been behind the Waco incident. The initial siege, anyway, by the ATF. And we also know, this shouldn't come as any surprise, that the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith is behind the Cult Awareness Network. Shouldn't surprise us, should it? For I've read to you before Protocol 13, Article 6, to you before, where it says, "Who will ever suspect then that all these people were stage managed by us according to a political plan which no one has so much as guessed at in the course of many centuries?" Shouldn't surprise us at all, and it shouldn't surprise us all if we were to find out genetically somehow those Ziphites are the forefathers or the progenitors of those same ones called the Anti-Defamation League today. Now, the word stronghold is also used in 2 Kings in chapter 8. I picked this one out of many places where you can find the word stronghold in the Old Testament. But I picked this one, and I think you'll see why. 2 Kings chapter 8, and verses 7 through 12. It says, "Then Elisha came to Damascus. Now Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, was sick, and it was told him, saying, 'The man of God has come here.' And the king said to Hazael, 'Take a gift in your hand, and go to meet the man of God, and inquire of Yahweh by him, saying, "Will I recover from this sickness?" So Hazael went to meet him and took a gift in his hand, even every kind of good thing of Damascus, 40 camel loads. And he came and stood before him and said, 'Your son Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, has sent me to you, saying, "Will I recover from this sickness?" Then Elisha said to him, 'Go say to him, "You shall surely recover, but Yahweh has shown me that he will certainly die." And he fixed his gaze steadily on him until he was ashamed, and the man of God wept. And Hazael said, "Why does my Lord weep?" Then he answered, Elisha answered, "Because I know the evil that you will do to the sons of Israel. Their strongholds you will set on fire, and their young men you will kill with the sword, and their little ones you will dash in pieces, and their women with child you will rip up." Sound familiar? Sounds to me like the FBI maybe took lessons from this Hazael when they went in and they burnt up the stronghold, literally ripped up the women, possibly pregnant, because that's exactly what happens when somebody's burned, by the way, if you didn't know. And they destroyed the women, the men, and the women, and the babies. You know, the majority of our people, they don't actually have compounds or strongholds. But let me tell you something. The government ought to be concerned over the fact that we do have homesteads. Because as Christian America begins to awaken, as she is, as she begins to discern the times around her, there's going to be in ever greater numbers men and women taking to heart the instructions that we find provided by Christ Himself in Luke 11 and Luke chapter 12. Luke 11, listen to both of these two passages and verse very carefully. Luke 11, starting with verses 21 through 23. Listen, discern, understand, and apply. Listen to what it says. It says in verse 21, "When a strong man fully armed guards his own homestead, his possessions are undisturbed." But then it says in verse 22, "But when someone stronger than he attacks him and overpowers him, he takes away from him all his armor on which he had relied and distributes his plunder. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters." I hope you can hear what's being said there. But it's saying that we have the right to protect our homestead. I had a man just call me just yesterday, or excuse me, Friday night, that was concerned about that very same thing, about all of what Judeo-Christianity is preaching and teaching out there about if you're attacked, the only responsibility that we have in protection of our family is to turn the other cheek. That's not what Christ was indicating here. He's indicating that we have the right, the responsibility. Keep in mind what it says in another epistle. that those who don't care for their families, who don't provide for their own, and especially their families, they're worse than infidels. And isn't providing, isn't part of provision, the protection of your family, not only their sustenance and their food and their clothing, but certainly even more so, providing for your family is providing for their protection. Protection of the homestead. I'll guarantee the government that is now ruling, the corrupt, tyrannical, despotic government we have today, had better be fearful of homesteads. Because Christian America is awakening, and all of a sudden they're going to start applying this principle. And you can see here very clearly that Christ not only said that we're to protect our homestead, he says stockpile. Stockpile so that there can't be somebody more powerful come along and take it from you. And then jump over to chapter 12 and verse 39. Verse 39 it says, "And be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have allowed his house to be broken into." What do you think he was going to do? I know. Dial 911. You know that's what they did down in Waco? I think you probably heard that. Probably I think Pete shared one of his messages. They're being attacked under the initial, quote-unquote, initial siege that was telecast by the ATF again that particular morning. What'd they do? They called 911. And as Pete Peters pointed out in one of his messages, it was 911 that was out there attacking them. Yeah. I don't think that's what Christ had in mind here. He said that he would prepare. He'd be ready. If he knew what hour the thief was coming, he wouldn't allow his home to be destroyed or his family to be in danger. And let me tell you something. Americans are beginning to wake up to who's the thief in the land. Especially after incidents like just occurred in La Porte, Colorado, when the La Porte Church of Christ and its property was seized. Not seized. Stolen. I'll guarantee, had they been able to have been there, knew when the thief was coming, I'll guarantee that place would have been protected and nothing would have been seized at all. Take it to heart, people. Learn, discern, and apply. Well, I have more that'll have to wait. But in the next message, I want to talk about more about Waco and the implications of what's just taken place in Waco. I want to talk about the bombing of the World Trade Center, the crime bill that's now before the Senate and Congress, also the immunization and the nationwide tracking bills that are right now in joint session before Congress and Senate as well. People, the signs of the times are around us, and we'd better wake up and we'd better start understanding them, not just you, not just the people I'm preaching to here and my main audience out there in the tape ministry, but our people need to wake up, and they need to be taught, and they need to understand the signs of the times. Maybe we should pray for the spirit of the Iscariotes to come upon our people. Let's go to our Heavenly Father in prayer. Let's stand. Our Heavenly Father, we do come before you at this time, humbly yet boldly through the blood and body of Yeshua the Christ. And Lord, it's my prayer that the spirit of the Iscariotes would indeed come upon our people, that our eyes could be opened, and that our ears could once again be in tune to the times, and especially in tune to you. Open our people's eyes, O Lord. Help them to be able to discern. And Father, I pray that you'd build an army of men and women, Father, who can go out and preach the word, the gospel of the kingdom, to those who, Father, indeed need to hear. I pray, Father, that you'd raise up workers, Lord, preachers, counterparts of the priests of old, Father, that will teach and help our people to discern. Father, we know that the victory is ours. The question is just when. But we do look forward, Father, to when you will indeed reign supreme and be recognized as that over this land once again. We ask, Father, that. We ask for your blessings and your direction, Father, and for this message to be used as you see fit to open the eyes of the remnant. We ask this now in Yeshua the Christ. Amen.